this has been on my mind for a couple of weeks. I have one sister left. She shared with me that she had a couple of situations when she was living in Texas where the Ku Klux Klan broke into the house where she was staying and dragged her out in a field towards a burning cross. All this time, she's never spoken about it. So as a result of that, I've been finding myself having a lot of violent thoughts. And I remember several classes back, you said that you had a practice where you worked on your violent thinking for like 24/7. So I guess I'm asking for assistance here in sort of reestablishing a practice. This for me is personal to me, and because I have concern for the trauma that my sister experienced. So that's the issue up for me, and I appreciate you taking my question.
Thank you. To the question of the practice. First of all, I have a confusion. I don't recall saying anything that even sounds similar to I work on violent thoughts 24/7.
Nonviolence, you practice 24/7. It made an impact on me when you said it. That's what I'm cycling back to.
So the practice that I want to give you for the kind of situation you and everyone else, where you want to be committed to the path of nonviolence, and here are the violent thoughts. Once we recognize that suppressing the violent thoughts is even more violent, then the other practice starts, first of all, with bringing tenderness to the violent thoughts without trying to make sense of them, just on the energetic field, love and tenderness to whatever violent thoughts come up in you. And the best image that helps with this, if it works, for some people it works, for others it might not, is you imagine someone that has completely pure love for you. Could be a grandmother, could be a dog, someone whose pure and total love of you, you fully trust, coming to you and enveloping you with that love as you're having these violent thoughts. And if it's human, you could even tell them the violent thoughts and they will just love you even more. That is a way in which you can find that agency within yourself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's harder to find it in, and it's easier to project it and imagine it out directed at self. Just sit with that. It's almost like a form of meditation. It's like reverse metta meditation. Instead of meditating on me loving other people, it's meditating on other people loving me. And if you do this and the field softens, my guess is that some learning and shift will be spontaneous. And if that happens, and if it's enough, then you stop there. But if it doesn't happen or doesn't happen enough, then you engage with the violent thoughts. You first of all complete them. Complete the thought. Let's say you would want to do this or that to those KKK people. Wring their necks. Pour lye on them. You know, whatever it is. This is this thing that Marshall was calling Enjoy the Jackal Show. It's his provocative way of speaking about the thing that I call bringing tenderness to it, and then letting it be fully there available so that you can then investigate what is in those thoughts. For as long as you try to suppress them, you will not be able to learn anything. So in my belief system, violence is always related to helplessness. And so there are two branches in the practice. Ultimately, I think you need to do both, but which order you will discover. One branch is to mourn the helplessness. Just be with the helplessness and mourn it. Just recognize you are one finite human body you cannot change the existence of white supremacy. That's what the helplessness is about. You would want to be able to wave a magic wand and the whole 7,000-year nightmare would go away. And it's very nice to have that fantasy. And that fantasy translates itself into, it's illogical, but it doesn't matter. It's emotionally logical, even though it's materially illogical. The emotional logic is, if I kill and maim and destroy those people, white supremacy will go away.
It won't, though.
It won't, but understanding the emotional logic of this is an antidote to the helplessness and mourning it is one piece of the puzzle. Another piece of the puzzle is learning what is the beauty at the heart of this violent thought. And that you go to by asking yourself, if this were fully successful in the illogical way that I hold it, even though it's materially illogical, emotionally, if this were fully successful, what would it give me? Okay, it would eliminate white supremacy, let's say, if that's what you get there. What is the positive vision that eliminating white supremacy means? Do you have a sense of what that is for you?
It's a sense of people who have the freedom to live wherever they want to live, because this situation arose because some Klansmen thought that she shouldn't be living where she was living.
Okay, so you identify this piece of vision. That's the one, ironically, in the name of which you want to kill those people or do whatever you want to do to them. I'm just making up killing, but I don't know if that's what it is. Whatever it is, that's the beauty of the vision in the name of which you want to do this thing. So if you ground yourself in that vision and its beauty, and you do the mourning about the helplessness, on the other side of that, you will find some peace that will allow you to choose how you want to respond. And there's another step that you can take on if and when you're ready for it. And that is the step of asking yourself, what is the beautiful vision in the name of which they were dragging your sister to the cross? What is it that they are protecting so fiercely that they are willing to kill and maim and torture other people? Because they and you are both products of patriarchy. They are in a different place because they are willing to cross the line between thoughts and action, and you are not. But that's a difference in degree. It's not a difference in essence.
Right, right.
So you could apply the same thing to them. What is the beautiful vision in the name of which they're doing this? You know, the best that I can come up with is some version of dignity. In the case of the Ku Klux Klan specifically, dignity and freedom of choice, because historically, you know, in certain moments of history, things were imposed on Southern whites people. Not that I am against what was imposed. I'm against it being imposed in the humiliating ways that it has been imposed. I would have wanted there to be mechanisms to catch the shame and humiliation and loss and do something with it. For them, not by you, right. For them. But aside from that, there is some way that they are losing something when your sister lives there. In their world, they're losing some dignities, some sense of familiarity, of belonging, you know, things that are also important to you that you would want each person to live in a sense of having belonging, of having dignity. You would want that for them, not through the methods that they have, not through the world that they have, not through the twisted ideas about history that they have. But at essence, you would want that for them. And once you're able to reach that place, then you're free. When you have done the mourning of the helplessness, the celebration of your own beautiful vision underneath your violent thoughts, and the curious exploration and openness to what could possibly be motivating them, you are a free woman. That is the carrot of nonviolence, is absolutely unlimited, intoxicating freedom.